Vayishma Yisro Chohen Midyan Chosein Moshe Eis Kol Asher Asa Elohim LeMoshe Ul Yisrael Amo Ki Hotzi Adonai Es Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim. Yitro, also known as Jethro, the minister of Midyan, the father-in-law of Moshe, heard everything that God did to Moshe and to Israel, his people, that Hashem had taken Israel out of Egypt.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Yitro, also known as Yisro. Recording and first broadcast Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 15th day of the month of Shvat, popularly known as Tu B'Shvat. Two is not the number two, but is 15 by the Hebrew letters Tet and Vav. So we'll talk about Tu B'Shvat too, even though many of the listeners will be hearing these words after Tu B'Shvat, and that's neither here nor there. This corresponds to January 16th. I've been doing some arithmetic and statistics, not really arithmetic, but observation of the calendar. We'll talk about this more as we approach February and Adar Rishon, because this year we have a calendar date match between February and Adar Aleph for the first 28 days of the Jewish month of Adar Aleph. The 28 days of February correspond in number. In other words, Rosh Chodesh, the first of Adar Rishon, is the 1st of February. And the 11th of February is the 11th of Adar Rishon, etc., etc. That is thrown off at the end of the month, where the 1st and the 2nd of March are the 29th and 30th of Shvat, of Adar Rishon, and Adar Sheni, which is 29 days long, right, finishes the month of March, so that April is perfectly matched with Nisan. And that's a 30-day month in both calendars, which means that May is also matched from the beginning of May until the 29th of Iyar. The numbers are matched. That's not the most unusual arrangement in the world, but I will give you my statistical findings in a week or two. Okay, so where are we? Yes, let us say, since on Tu B'Shvat we don't say Tachanun, my custom on the show is to recite Psalm 121 instead of 130, Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph. Shir Lama'alot, Esa Einai El Heharim, Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me'im Adonai, Osei Shamayim Va'aretz. Al Yitein Lamot Raglecha, Al Yanum Shomerecha. Hine lo yanum velo yishan shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha al yad yeminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'ad olam. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya. Ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yorachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'me'afela la'ora u'mishibud la'geula hashta ba'agala u'vizman kariv v'nomar amen. Okay, since it's not probably Tu B'Shvat where you're when you're listening to this, I won't go into the whole shmear of Tu B'Shvat, but let's start covering a couple of bases. First and foremost, is a statement, a Mishnah, in Masechet Rosh Hashanah that speaks of four Rosh Hashanahs. Now, the Jewish calendar that we're familiar with has one date that we call Rosh Hashanah. That's the first and the second of Tishrei in September, October, and that's what we refer to when we say Rosh Hashanah. The Mishnah, which mentions it further down the list, number three actually, out of the four Rosh Hashanahs, speaks of it as the Rosh Hashanah when people are judged, and all people pass before God like sheep passing before a shepherd's crook. And there are other interpretations to that, not for now. The first Rosh Hashanah that's mentioned in the Mishnah is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, coming up in a couple of months, and that has certain ramifications and status. The second one is Rosh Hashanah L'Maser Behema, for the tithing of animals. We won't get into that now either. The fourth one that's listed in the Mishnah is Rosh Hashanah La'ilanot, the new year for trees, and it is subject of a dispute between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai said the first of Shvat, Beit Hillel said the 15th of Shvat, and that's the prevailing opinion. So we observe Tu B'Shvat, Rosh Hashanah L'Ilanot, on Tu B'Shvat, on the 15th of Shvat. The halachic significance of it is, I was going to say minor, but is narrow, is small. There are considerations in halacha, in Jewish law, where we need to know to what year does a certain produce belong. This could be a situation where plants or grain developed at the end of one year and they're not harvested till after Rosh Hashanah. And the question is this considered last year's produce or this year's produce? And specifically with trees, it depends why we're asking. So if we're talking about the age of a tree, for the fact that we're not allowed to eat from its fruit for the first 3 years of its growth, and the fourth year has a special status, and only from the fifth year on we're allowed to eat, then I need to know what is considered the age of a tree. Now, what is not considered the age of a tree is actually when it's planted, because we consider Rosh Hashanah, the regular Rosh Hashanah in September, to be the universal birthdays of trees. That means if a tree managed to be planted, or let's say a grapevine, which has the status of a tree, managed to be planted before 6 weeks, at least 6 weeks before Rosh Hashanah, then when Rosh Hashanah comes, it's considered to have had its first year of growth already, and this is now the new year of growth. And it's very important because the third year grapes are forbidden to eat, and the fourth year grapes can be redeemed and are permitted to eat, and the fifth year for sure. And we need to know things like that. When it comes to the year of a tree for other considerations, we need to know, for example, for tithing, whether the fruit of a tree belongs to year 1, 2, 4, 5 of a Shemitah cycle or year 3 or 6. And because there is a second tithe that is given, and those are different in different years. In any event, for various reasons, since the rains are pretty much finished by Tu B'Shvat, I hope that's not the case now for us, we could use some more rain, but as far as the growth is concerned, fruits that already started to develop before Tu B'Shvat are considered last year's fruits, and only those that start now are considered next year's fruit. I mean, this, whatever. Anyway, that's the halachic significance of the date. However, Tu B'Shvat took on much, much more than a halachic significance. It became the day that celebrates the fruits of Eretz Yisrael, land of Israel. And there are many verses and many ideas that we have that draw analogies between human beings and trees. A straight verse from the Torah, Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh, for man is like the tree of the field. And there are physical similarities, and there are physiological similarities, and there certainly are emotional and maybe psychological similarities, why we would relate specifically to trees, but it's a fact. And therefore, we make a fuss about Tu B'Shvat, about the fruits of Eretz Yisrael, and this is kind of different between here in Israel and the way it's done in Chutz La'aretz. I grew up in New York area. I shouldn't say that. I grew up in the sovereign state of Brooklyn and then moved to Queens before I came in Aliyah. And in my childhood, I have these less than fond memories of parents coming in who were on the committee for Tu B'Shvat and handing out these brown paper bags with all kind of Tu B'Shvat goodies, which usually meant raisins, which people liked, and almonds, which some people liked, and dates, which hardly anyone liked, and figs, which hardly anyone liked, and buxer, which maybe one kid in the class would like. And that was a Tu B'Shvat goodie bag that we used to get. Where the chocolate was, I never found out, and the potato chips and stuff like that. But this is how it was done, and we made brachot and spoke about it. It was just a way, sort of identifying, and probably still is a way of identifying with Eretz Yisrael. One of my daughters pointed out to me this morning an obvious thing, but it's good to have it pointed out once in a while, that if we look at the after bracha for the fruits that are mentioned in praise of Israel, we're talking about the famous pasuk, Deuteronomy Devarim 8:8, Eretz chita usa'ora, land of wheat and barley, v'gefen uteina v'rimon, and grapevines, figs, and pomegranates, Eretz zeit shemen u'devash, a land of the olives that give oil, and the honey which is extracted from, or made from, dates. Those seven species subdivide into two grains, chitan sora, and five fruits. And the afterbracha for the fruits is particularly strikes you on a day like Tu B'Shvat, although we say it any day that we eat fruit, where you speak of not just thank you God for the fruit that I ate, or the food, whatever, but it's specifically Al Eretz Chemda Tova Urechava, for a lovely and expansive land, Sheratzita, that you wanted, V'hinchalta Lavotenu, and you gave its inheritance to our ancestors, Le'echol mi Piria, to eat from its fruit, V'lisboa mi Tuva, and to be satisfied by its bounty and its good. Now, this echoes the same idea in Birkat HaMazon, where we speak of the land, and both echo the verse in the Torah of V'achalta V'savata, you shall eat and be satisfied, U'veirachta T'Hashem Elokecha, and acknowledge God and thank Him and bless Him. But what for? Not just thank you for the food, Al Eretz, for the land, Al Ha'aretz, for the land which He has given us. And that's a theme of Birkat HaMazon. It's a theme that's even more expressed proportionally in the Bracha Acharona, the Bracha Me'ein Shalosh, which we say after products of the grain, cookies and pretzels and pasta and things like that, and the fruits that are listed that I mentioned before. So it's an association. This is a fruit, but this is a fruit of Eretz Yisrael. Now, you could extend this a little to fruits that actually grow in Israel that aren't on the list, and when they sell them in Chutz La'aretz. And I remember someone telling me once, before she came on Aliyah, I used to identify so much with Israel that I would drive out of my way when I went vegetable shopping and buy tomatoes from a specialty shop that sold them at a higher price, but they were from Israel, as opposed to anywhere else in the world. And I could understand that. I could relate to it. I think it's nice when you live here that you're able to go to the shuk and really enjoy the bounty of the land. Although I must tell you that shopping for Tu B'Shvat fruits, which I did yesterday in Machane Yehuda, is a little tricky because you have to keep saying, are these from Israel? No, they're imported from Turkey. Are these from Israel? Are these? Are these? Now, you do find figs that are imported. You can find, if you look hard, figs that grow here. And dates, many of them grow here, and that's what you choose. Almonds are imported, and almonds grow here as well. Same thing for raisins. You could get California sunshine raisins. What do they call it? Starkist? No, not Starkist. I forgot the name of it already. Those little red boxes of raisins where after you ate them, you could make a sound with them when you blew into them. Anyway, instead of those, we have raisins that are produced here in Israel from grapes that grow in Israel. And that's how people really wanted to relate more to Tu B'Shvat. I think I've said more than enough for now. I want to finish this part with a song which I've played in the past called Ilan Ilan, Tree, O Tree. It's a perfect song for Tu B'Shvat, and it's a song which underscores the analogies that are made between human beings and trees. It's from a Gemara, and the Gemara speaks about a person being in a quandary as to how to bless someone who seemed to have had everything that he would like to give him a blessing about. He said, how should I bless you with Torah? You have Torah. With kindness, you are very kind. With children, you have children, etc. So the answer was, let me give you an analogy, a mushal. Guy's walking in the wild, and he's tired, and he's thirsty, and he's hot. And he sees a beautiful tree with long, luxurious branches hanging down, luscious fruit growing on the tree, and a beautiful little stream flowing right by it. And he sits down in the shade of the tree, and he enjoys the fruit and the cool water he splashes on his face and drinks. And then when he's about to take his leave and continue on his journey, he says, tree, oh tree, how can I thank you? Should I wish you luxurious fruit? You have that. Should I wish you beautiful shade to provide? You do that. How about a stream with fresh, delicious water? You have that also. Ah, I know. I pray and wish you and bless you that all the shoots that are planted from you should grow to be as beautiful as you. That's what you wish a person to. A person who has all kind of good qualities, you wish him that his children should be like him. And that's a Gemara which underlines this analogy between a person and a tree. And we just get into it. Now, I would put on the song immediately, but I'm going to hold it for the beginning of the second half. I still have to find out if there is such a thing as two halves to the show anymore. It's just one 46-minute show. In fact, I have to find out if they want me to give it a different timing in the future. But in the meantime, let's talk a few more things about the fruits. I was talking to somebody earlier today about the concept of brachot, blessings for fruit, for foods. Now, we have a notion that a person may not benefit from the bounty of this world, meaning eating and drinking, without acknowledging God, without thanking God. It belongs to him. It would be sacrilege to take something that is sacred, belongs to God, and to use it for our own purpose. By making a bracha, we are redeeming that for ourselves, as the pasuk, the verse says, Hashamayim shamayim lashem, the heavens are God's, v'haaretz natan livnei adam, in this world he gave to us. And our redemption of that which really belongs to God, based on another verse of Lahashem ha'aretz umeloah, the world and everything in it belongs to God. So how can you say that he gave it to us? Is it his? Is it ours? The answer is, if we make a bracha on the food, it becomes ours. So eating without a bracha is either like stealing from God or sacrilege. Either way, it's not very good. So we make brachot. Now, the sages were charged with composing the bracha that we should say. And even though we know the end result of their deliberations, I could imagine that there were two other directions they chose not to go in. Number one would be to come up with a bracha that covers everything. And we have such a bracha. It's called Shehakol Nihya Bidvaro, that everything that exists came into existence at God's command. Ready? He's going to say it. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Yitro, but for Tu Bishvat as well. So let's finish this up. Let me play the song, and then we'll get into Yitro. Chazal, our sages, in charge with giving us what to say, based on that we should say something to God, could have said, you know what, here is a formula. Blessed are you, God, our God, King of the universe, that everything that exists came into existence at your divine command. And that would cover everything. In fact, we have that bracha. The bracha is called Shehakol Nihya Bidvaro. And every food and drink could be included in it. And we would have a single bracha, a single blessing, that we would say when we take a sip of water, all the way to sit down to a 5-course meal, one bracha. They didn't do that. They could have gone the opposite direction. They could have said, everything in that you make a bracha on, you have to identify specifically. So it's not a general creator of the fruits of the tree, but we would mention an apple, and we mention an orange, and an avocado, and mango, and put that into every single blessing. There'd be thousands of them for the variety of foods that we eat. They could have done that. They didn't. What they did was, now I can't say for sure whether they started with Shehakol Nihya Bidvaro, but let's say they did. And then they were sitting and talking this out, and someone said, you know, I think we should distinguish in brachot, or by brachot, between foods that grow in the ground and foods that don't. We take water and we drink it. We milk a cow and we drink the milk. We slaughter a cow and we eat its meat. We take eggs from chickens and eat them. These are things that we will leave as Shehakol Nihya Bidvaro, that everything that exists came in by divine command. But we would like to acknowledge the land which gives us food. There's a substantial difference, a significant difference, between killing a chicken and eating it and planting a fruit or a vegetable, let's say, and nurturing it and growing and harvesting and eating it. It's an acknowledgement of the land, which the Pasuk in Devarim commands us to acknowledge. And it's also a realization that there are different ways that we could get food, but this one is different because it involves a certain kind of labor with the land that the just take whatever you want doesn't. So they played around and they came up, let's say, with Borei Pri Ha'adama, fruit of the ground. The next day, when they sat and deliberated, somebody said, now this is all my hypothetical, somebody said, yeah, that's good, and apple trees grow in the ground, and apples grow on apple trees, so in essence, apples grow from the ground, but I think we should create another blessing that would acknowledge the specialness of a tree. And, sure enough, that's what they did. They said, on an apple, we say Borei Pri Ha'etz, and on a potato, Borei Pri Ha'adama. What's the difference? What's the big deal? Well, part of the big deal is that when you take an apple from a tree and you eat it, it's going to grow another one the following year, and you will have a crop of apples every year that come from the same tree that somebody planted a long time ago. You plant the potato, it grows, and you eat it, and that's it. It's gone. You need to plant more. So there is something to it. Possibly also what we've been saying in the context of Tu B'Shvat, Ki Ha'adam Eitz HaSadeh. We relate to the tree. The tree is not just a plant. The tree provides shade. The tree houses birds and squirrels and who knows what else. The tree will serve us even after it's not giving us fruit by providing paper and providing wood and bark and medicines and all kind of other things. So someone in this committee for the making of brachot felt that we needed to build certain things into the different blessings so that we, who will be saying blessings year after year, generation after generation, for all time, will not take certain things for granted and will be reminded of certain things. And so on it went, and the wine from the grape was special, and it got its own bracha, and that which came from the grain got the mezonot, or in special cases, hamotzi. And that's how the brachot were formulated for us. And it behooves us to appreciate that by making it a thinking process and not something by rote. I said at the beginning that since Tu B'Shvat is probably over when you're listening to this, I wasn't going to belabor the point, but I did, and I'm not sorry for it, but we'll stop here. Here is Ilan Ilan.
Ilan Ilan Bame avarecha Bame avarecha Ilan Ilan Bame avarecha Bame avarecha Ilan, Ilan, va me avarechecha, va me avarechecha. lecha ilan ilan va me ava lecha va me ava lecha te yehu perotecha metuki Tuki Sheyeh Tzir Chanaim Harei Tzir Chanaim Sheyeh Uperotecha Metuki Harei Perotecha Metuki
Okay, let's change gears and get into Parshat Yitro. I always want to point out the following. The book of Shemot is very dramatic in the beginning. We start enslaved, then there's the birth of Moshe, then there's the scene at the Nile with Moshe being saved by none other than the daughter of Paro, and growing up in his palace and getting involved with the Jewish community, and saving a Jew by smiting an Egyptian and burying him in the sand, and then trying to break up a fight between two Jews, and then God appearing to him at the burning bush, through the burning bush, via the burning bush, and sending him to give Paro a message, redeem, let the people go, or I will kill your firstborns. And then into Va'era with the magnificent prophecy of redemption and revelation at Sinai, looming in the near future, and the promise of entry into Eretz Yisrael, the foundation and forming of a nation. And then the plagues continue into Parshat Bo, and then the dramatic events of the night of the Exodus, the night of the smiting of the firstborns, the night of eating the Korban Pesach, and the actual Exodus the following morning, and moving into Bishalach, where the Egyptians change their mind and they pursue the Jews, the Israelites will call them, and the scene at the sea, and the splitting of the sea, miracle upon miracle, the Israelites go across, and the pursuing Egyptians are drowned, and then the song of the sea, and then the miraculous events of the sweetened water, and the water from the rock, and the manna from heaven, and, not on a good note, but the battle against Amalek, more drama, and then in Yitro, not at the beginning, but in middle of Yitro, we have the dramatic events of arrival at Sinai and the preparation for revelation at Sinai, and then the actual account of Ma'amad Har Sinai and the Ten Commandments. Drama. At the beginning of the Sedra of Yitro is one chapter which probably didn't occur chronologically where it is anyway. And if we were to remove Exodus 18, Shemot, Perek Yudchet, just take it out of the Chumash for a moment, don't worry, we'll put it back in, you would not miss a beat. The battle against Amalek took place at a location called Rephidim, and Chapter 19 begins with Bachodesh Hashlishi, Letzeit Bnei Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim, Bayom Hazeh Bo Midbar Sinai, and it describes the travel from Rephidim to the Sinai wilderness. So, drama, 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 sequence, 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 chronology, would be fine. Stuck in. And naming the Sedra Yitro, you have Moshe's father-in-law brings Moshe's wife and his two children to Moshe, and he's interested in what's going on, and he praises God for all the miracles that he performed for Israel, and our tradition is that he joined us as a convert. And then he wants to see what his son-in-law does for a living, so he goes out one morning, and he sees Moshe and how difficult it is in judging the people, and he's doing it all by himself, and Yitro has this recommendation that he form a system of leaders of groups of 1,000, and within that 100s, and within that 50s, and within that 10s, so that there is some kind of system when people have questions and when people have disputes that they could handle it, and they don't have to wait hours and hours till they're able to speak to Moshe. Moshe will be in charge of the difficult cases and in the educational system, but the judging of the people, fine. All down-to-earth, practical, mundane, not even occurring in the position of the timeline where it is, but it certainly breaks up the drama. And you take this one step further, and after Yitro comes Mishpatim, and the bulk of Mishpatim are nitty-gritty, down-to-earth details of civil law, all kinds, 53 mitzvot in Mishpatim. And at the end of Mishpatim, you have the continuation of the story, of the dramatic story, of Matan Torah, of Revelation at Sinai. It seems mixed up. It seems that the Yitro portion, which dealt with courts, should be attached to the bulk of the Mishpatim, and that should happen after Matan Torah, and not be a break in the drama and drama of the sequence. But the answer is, this is where it is, and we have to deal with that, because we ask ourselves, what is this portion of Yitro doing here? And there are several different answers, and they don't clash with each other. They're meant to dovetail and to help explain and understand. First and foremost, I would say first and foremost, but I'm saying that on my own, is the fact that Yitro as an individual came under the protection of the divine wing, so to speak, wanted to join the Jewish people, admired and marveled at the wonders that God produced, and he was a single individual. As opposed to, or to complement, the fact that we have been thinking in terms of Bnei Yisrael, the children of Israel, for a while now in the Torah, no longer as the individuals who made up a small family and continued the traditions of their grandfather and their father, but we keep talking to them about multiplying and becoming a large people, and Paro calls them Am Bnei Yisrael, and the individual sort of gets lost in this massive group. Comes Yitro and teaches us that we are still individuals. The example is Yitro, but each and every single Jew of this large multitude was a single individual person. And we hope that when he said, together with everybody else, we will do what God commands, that he was making a personal, individual decision of commitment to God, and not just going along with everybody else. That's what we learn from Yitro. There are other reasons why he's there, but let's move on. Now, you might find this hard to believe, but I'm running out of time. I really have to check this 46-minute issue, because I'm sure the OU Radio doesn't mind. The question is how Arutz Sheva handles it. In any event, starting in Chapter 19, we arrive at Sinai. The arrival at Sinai, even without yet the experience of receiving of the Torah, is a monumental experience for the people. It's an act of unity, and the preparations are very significant in the whole picture of things. And then we hear God's voice, and our tradition is that he purposely communicated with us so that we would be able to hear, and not by some kind of telepathic method. It needed to be a regular experience so that this multitude of 2 to 3 million people would be able to transmit to their children and children's children through the generations their eyewitness account, their sensory perceptions. Even though they were heightened, they still received the Torah in the way that human beings perceive something. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt out of the house of bondage, is a statement, is an introduction, and it is a mitzvah, the mitzvah to believe in God. We will definitely try to talk about this some other time, because time is really, really running out. I am left with Shabbat Shalom, happy Tu B'Shvat if it's still that for you, and Lahish Tameah.